Before we get into today's episode, I want to let you know about a free ebook for you to download today that you won't want to miss. It's called In Conversation with Jordan Peterson, Atheism, Christianity, and the Psychology of Belief. This special ebook was created from an unbelievable podcast with famed Canadian psychologist Jordan Peterson. And in it, you'll discover how to bring order to a chaotic world using the wisdom of the Bible. So download your free copy of In Conversation with Jordan Peterson by visiting premierinsight.org/resources. That's premierinsight.org/resources. This is a limited time offer, so make sure to do it today. That's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
Good afternoon and welcome to Unbelievable with me, Justin Brierley, brought to you on Premier Christian Radio every Saturday afternoon and around the world via our podcast. We are the show that hosts the conversation between Christians and skeptics, and I can tell you it's a real hub of activity here at Premier Towers at the moment. We're running off conference schedules, we're erecting banners. It's all go because, of course, it's just a week now until Unbelievable, the conference 2019 in London. And thanks to all of those who have already got in touch to say they'll be coming, those who have booked their tickets. But there's still lots of you out there who I know have said, I'm coming, I just haven't booked yet. So don't delay. We want to know that you're coming. Go to the website premierchristianradio.com/unbelievableconference to get yourself booked in. And there you'll find all the brilliant speakers that are going to be on the bill and all the many topics that you can choose from across a whole range of seminars happening at Westminster Central Hall. Now, Krish Kandai is going to be on today's show. I'll be introducing him and my agnostic guest, Tom, in a short moment. But Krish will be opening up this year's conference, talking on conversations matter. It's not just what you say, it's how you say it. And then there's going to be a number of other plenary sessions through the first half of the morning. Lorcan Price, Standing for Christ in a Post-Christian Culture. Are we free to speak the truth? He'll be asking. Christy Mayer, Why Aren't We Reaching the Millennials? Talking to a true for you, but not for me generation. Craig Hazen of Biola Apologetics, The Truth About Jesus, Why the Good News is Way Better Than Fake News. Those are some of the talks that will start us off, launch us into this year's conference. We've also got some exclusive video material as well. You'll get a sneak peek of The Big Conversation Season 2 if you come to this year's conference. There's also going to be plenary panels across the course of the day. Ruth Jackson from Premier Youth and Children's Work magazine leading a youth panel on what questions are young people actually asking. And of course, there'll be that full panel discussion that ends the day with guests from across the course of the day on speaking truth in a post-truth world, picking up a lot of the questions that often get left to the end of the day from the audience. And then there's all kinds of seminars through the course of the day. Confident Conversations is one of the streams. Krish Kandai on Meeting the Faithiest, Why Christians and Atheists Have More in Common Than You Think. Bruxy Cavey on Creating Better Conversations, How to Talk About Jesus with Sinners, Saints and Skeptics. Defending Freedom, led by ADF International, Ryan Christopher on Is Abortion a Human Right? And we'll be hearing more of your feedback on the episode we did on that a few weeks ago. And Lawrence Wilkinson, Can I Take My Faith to Work? On Israel Folau, Gay Cakes and Christian Freedom. Again, we talked about those issues with Lawrence on a recent show. There's the Apologetics Masterclass Seminar stream with Biola Apologetics. Paul Spears on How Can I Know That Christianity Is True? And Fred Sanders on Was Jesus Really God? The Evidence for Christ's Radical Claims About Himself. Other Religions is another seminar strand. Sarah Lumger, What Do Muslims Believe About Christians? How to Respond to Islam with Truth and Love. And Christy Mayer comes back for Is It Arrogant to Believe Jesus Is the Only Way? Speaking Truth in a Pluralistic Culture. And of course, there's the Reaching Young People stream, which we were talking about last week. Tim Alford, Ruth Jackson and Emily Howarth will all be involved there. Meet Generation Z is one of the seminars, who they are and how to reach them, plus why do young people leave the church? Going to be super practical, informative, challenging and inspiring. Can I encourage you to come along? Bring a friend as well. If you book two tickets, you get last year's conference on DVD absolutely free. And did I mention it's free tea and coffee all day as well? So this is your final call here on The Unbelievable Show to get yourself booked in the coming week. premierchristianradio.com/unbelievableconference. Looking forward to meeting you there on Saturday, the 20th of July. Right now, it's time to get into today's edition of the show.
You're unbelievable.
Today, we're talking about God is Stranger as an agnostic and Christian on the search for God. Join me, Krish Kandaya and Tom Newman joining me on the show today. Well, Krish is perhaps well known as a speaker, author, theologian, activist, and he's speaking at this year's Unbelievable Conference 2019 in just 1 week's time. He'll be speaking about creating confident conversations, partly on the back of his recent book, Faithism, Why Christians and Atheists Have More in Common Than You Think. But Krish has also been honoured with a nomination for this year's Ramsey Prize for another book of his, God is Stranger, Finding God in Unexpected Places. So today we're going to be talking about the search for God as Krish engages with Tom, whose podcast, Hiding in Plain Sight, documents his search for faith as an agnostic. In fact, we played out the first episode of that podcast on the Unbelievable podcast a few weeks ago. And Tom's journey involved visiting churches, engaging in Christian practices, fascinating stuff, and he'll tell us about it again on the show today. Krish, meanwhile, says that the stories of God encounters in the Bible are often stranger than many Christians are ready to admit, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. So we're going to hear how Tom has responded in his own search for the God of Christianity. So Krish and Tom, welcome along to the show today.
Great to be here.
Lovely to be here.
It's great to have you both on. We'll come to you, Tom, in a moment, because I had such a good response from listeners when we aired that first episode of your Hiding in Plain Sight podcast. But we'll start with you, Krish. Welcome back to the show. And excited that you're going to be joining us at Unbelievable, the conference, very shortly now. Give us a little flavour of what you're going to be talking about when you join us, because I've got you on right up at the front of the conference doing a little TED Talk style piece on how to basically have good conversations, and then you're going to be talking about meeting the faithiest as well a bit later on in the conference.
Well, I'm really looking forward to the conference. You've given it a great subtitle this year, Speaking Truth in a Post-Truth World, and in a time when people are talking about false news and alternative truths, now's a great time to be talking about truth. It feels like truth is in the public domain to be debated, which is fantastic. And the TED Talk that I will give, I guess, draws on some of the big ideas in my Faithism book about having better conversations. I notice when I Google or look on YouTube at Christianity and atheism, apart from your amazing show, often they're not great conversations. They're a bit shouty, in fact. It feels like we're having this debate in capital letters on Twitter. And you'll see a YouTube video that says, you know, 10 reasons why anyone who believes in God is an idiot, or the alternative way around, atheists are losers or something. So I think we need to kind of put down the weapons and figure out a way where to find common ground. And actually, we have more in common than most people think. And that's the premise of the book, Faithism. So, you know, I read a lot of books by atheists about Christians. And I often don't recognise the Christians that the atheists are talking about. So they're the kind of Christians that apparently want to bomb abortion clinics, or, you know, we picket outside places where people are having abortions, or we're trying to scare kids into the kingdom by, I think Richard Dawkins talked about these hell houses that people set up at Halloween, which, you know, we feed small children in and then try to scare them that you know, God's going to burn them. And I've never met a Christian like this. Or equally, sadly, sometimes we Christians write books about atheists and we assume all the atheists are like Richard Dawkins. They're on a single mission to destroy the Christian faith. And again, apart from Richard Dawkins, I've never met an atheist like this. Most atheists I know are on the PTA at our local school, or they're helping out at a football club. And so we actually have more in common than we think, and we don't need to go for the polar extremes. And so this talk I'll give at the Unbelievable Conference will look about, well, how do you find common ground? How do you honour and respect someone else's opinion? And then have space for a gracious conversation that's not shying away from the difficult stuff, but not assuming the other person's out to kill you.
Yeah, well, brilliant stuff, and a very good introduction to the conversation we're going to be having today with Tom, who you've only just met, but I'm sure you guys are going to get on really well in the course of today's conversation. I'll come back to you to talk a little bit about God is Stranger, the other book we want to focus on in today's conversation. But Tom, welcome to the show. Great to have you on, because first time we've really had you on the show to talk in your own capacity, having heard the first episode of this fabulous podcast that you created a little while back about your own journey looking for faith. So you're Welsh, first of all. Let's put that out on the table.
I am, and I'm wearing red, as is Chris.
I am, for different reasons.
You've come very colour-coordinated. Is yours because you support Liverpool, Chris?
Well, it's because I cycle, and I want people to see me rather than kill me.
Okay.
And I didn't want to wear fluorescent yellow.
There you go.
Mine's because I'm Welsh.
Yours is because you're Welsh. you're a Welsh man, but obviously living in the southeast now. And how did you kind of, first of all, bump into my show? Because that's how we got to know each other. And what put you on the journey to kind of deciding to explore Christianity in this rather unique way of jumping in and trying it out, basically?
Yeah, and the answer to that, I probably joined in some way. So the finding of the Unbelievable Show, I could probably draw quite a straight line between that and the start of Hiding in Plain Sight podcast. I feel like here today, I am a sort of fan in the room almost. I've been listening to Unbelievable for a long, long time. I can't actually remember when I started. It was quite early on. It feels like 6 years or so or something like that, a long time. And I think and you mentioned it, Christian, what you said there, what Justin does in the show and what this show is about is creating a sort of safe space to have proper challenging conversations. And I noticed that idea, and as a listener, you can't help but spot that as you listen to the show. But I got to a point, I think, where I was kind of intellectually out, if you like. And I kind of got to a stage where, what is the thing I could do now? I kind of, you hear all the arguments, you hear the debates on either side. But I wanted to kind of take it a step further, and I wanted to do something that I thought would challenge me in a different way. So I stepped out of my comfort zone, and I thought it would be a good idea to try and experience Christianity in a more day-to-day way. And that's what the series is about. It's asking that question, what happens if I park my agnostic atheist views at the church door? Just let them settle for a while. Don't get rid of them, because you can't shake them off fully. But what happens if I just stop worrying about them for a second and just engage with the Christianity that's there in front of me? And that's what season one's all about.
Yeah, and without giving away too many spoilers, it's a fantastic kind of, very, very much sort of produced in a sort of documentary style, where you're talking to, well, I say camera, but really microphone, about your experiences as you go to church, you talk to the Christians you meet. It's lovely to hear the kind of range of people that you meet and their different experiences of how they've engaged with faith and so on. And what, you know, again, without maybe giving away the punchline, what are the kind of things you learnt along the way that were helpful for you in that journey?
Yeah, I'd start off by saying, I think I took away, tying into Chris's book, stranger things than I thought I would. There's elements I didn't think I would find discovery in that I really, really did. They fall into three areas. I think the obvious ones are things around community. Christians do community in a really interesting and kind of, you might not notice it as a Christian if you're just involved with it all the time. But as an outsider coming into that, it's almost like an old-fashioned style, traditional community. What That's I think about when my grandparents talk about growing up in the valleys in Wales, it almost feels a little bit like that where I am in Chessington, the Christians that do community there. So I was fascinated by the community side of things. And then there's also the philosophical, you guys wouldn't necessarily call it philosophy, but when you kind of take it on as a non-believer, it's actually, how do you take these messages that are in the Bible and what can they tell you about your own life? I talk about it in the final episode. Christianity was a devil's advocate for me. I sort of held it up in front of myself and allowed it to ask me some quite tough questions. And I really liked that relationship with the faith and sort of trying to work out what would it ask of me as a non-believer, both how I should live my life, but also maybe what I should think about the world and things like that. So I found that really good. And the last area, I think, is maybe something maybe unique to European Christianity in some sense, is just the depth of the culture. So the cultural elements of it, the holy spaces, the old churches, the old book itself, all of these things that you get by being a British Christian, I guess, that you probably might get in other parts of the world as well, where it's been around for such a long time, the historical elements of it. There's quite a historical theme throughout the series where I touch on some of the historical bits. I go to the British Museum and see the earliest image of Jesus and things like that. There's a real richness to that I just geeked out on and loved it. So those are probably the sort of three main areas for me.
Well, look, you've given a great little overview of some of the elements involved in it. Do go and check it out if you haven't. You can obviously listen back on this podcast to the first episode that we aired, I think back in May, but go and check it out at hipspodcast.com if you want to listen in full. It'd be well worth your time. I really, really enjoyed actually listening through that myself. We're going to be talking, though, on the show today about sort of your search for God, Tom, how Krish has kind of talked about that search in the pages of the Bible with his book God is Stranger as well. And if you're interested in getting in touch yourself about anything you hear on today's programme, do feel free to email unbelievable@premier.org.uk is the place to send your thoughts. Facebook.com/unbelievablejb for the Facebook page of the show, @unbelievablejb if you want to get in touch with me on Twitter, and all of those links and links, of course, to my guests too from today's show page as well. PremierChristianRadio.com/unbelievable.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
So, Krish, as we unpack this, let's talk about your other book, God is Stranger. I mean, you write more books than I've had hot dinners, I think.
Man, you should eat more.
I know. But it does feel like, though, every couple of years, at least, there's a book. You're a writer and a reader, and you that seems to be one of the things that obviously engages you. But then you've also got, I mean, I haven't even had time to mention Home for Good, all this amazing work you do in terms of fostering and adoption and encouraging Christians especially to get involved in that work. But the God is Stranger book, which, as I say, has been nominated for the E.C. Ramsey Prize, kind of draws together in that sense a number of different passions of yours. Reading, the Bible, the, you know, adoption and fostering and so on. So tell us about the book. What's at the core of this, and what made you want to write it?
So I write books, and I write books with my wife. We're a team. I'm the front face. She's a private person, so doesn't want to kind of promote the books, but the books are definitely written between the two of us. So I partly write the books as therapy, in that there are things I'm wrestling with and I can't figure them out until I write them down. And there's some big kind of tectonic plates going around at the moment, things that are shifting around Christianity around the world. So, you know, you don't have to look very far on the internet before some American white Christian is backing Donald Trump and arguing that we need to protect Judeo-Christian culture from immigrants. Katie Hopkins has been saying this recently. The president of Hungary has said this. And that really jarred with what I understood of Christianity. You know, Christianity seems to be about welcome, and, you know, your history, your culture is to be welcomed and embraced by the church and by Christians, and we're supposed to welcome the strangers. So I was kind of writing into that space to say, look, let's relook at the biblical text and find out what it really has to say about hospitality and welcome in this very polarized moment politically. And I also wrote it as a kind of extension of the Paradoxology book. So Paradoxology was a book I wrote arguing that Christianity was never meant to be simple, and I tried to look at the hardest parts of the Bible I could find.
We had you on about that book, actually.
We did.
At the time.
Yeah.
Great conversation. I think, you know, it was with Tony up in Scotland who was on the show.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that, but yeah. That
cool, you've got a great memory.
Well, it's somewhere dredging it out of the memory banks. But yeah, but this was a sort of part two almost to that
it
book.
It is.
Yeah.
And I realised there was a crossover in my life between Paradoxology was me, kind of, I suppose, a theologian, apologist, trying to help Christians wrestle with the tough stuff that I'd been wrestling with in the Bible, and the other half of my life is trying to inspire Christians to offer hospitality through fostering and adoption. And actually, if Paradoxology and Home for Good got married and adopted a child, well, that would be God is Stranger, because as I looked at the Bible, I realized hospitality is like a golden thread through the Bible. You get to know God in a really radical way as you welcome people into your life that really need it. And in one sense, it's a great conversation to have with Tom. I love the premise of the podcast, that you don't ultimately come to know Christianity by being argued into it. There is an aspect in which you jump in with both feet and try to live it. And that seems to be the experience in the Bible, you know. So that there's a very famous parable Jesus told called the parable of the sheep and the goats. And the test of whether you're in the kingdom of God or not is not whether you know all the right theological answers. It's not whether you've turned up at church. It's not whether you've given 10% of your money. It's when someone was in need, you responded to that need, you welcomed them into your home, you fed them, you gave them something to drink, you clothed them. And Jesus said, when you did this for me. And so the litmus test of real living Christianity is not ultimately just our set of beliefs. It's not our ascription. It's not, you know, whether we write Christian on our passport or not. It's whether we're living this thing out. And that really was the bit that unlocked the book for me. And hence we have the God is Stranger book.
Yeah. You've had a chance to look at the book, Tom. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I think two things stood out to me. For the first one, I think there's quite a brave opening to the book, which I think I was really struck by. You know, Chris really sets out, you know, life can be quite appalling in places, and it's not run away from at all in the book. I quite like that aspect of it. It's not, it's trying to smooth over some of the rough edges of what it is to live even a relatively charmed life like we might experience here in the UK. Even that comes, you even talk about that. There's a great line in the book which I couldn't stop thinking about, which is where you say, I'm sort of bastardizing it a little bit, but you talk about sort of we cover up our busyness or we cover up our emptiness with our busyness in life. And I think I really resonated with me when I was thinking about Hiding in Plain Sight, the podcast. I was thinking about my day-to-day journey, the commuting all the time, all the busyness you do. You try to fill your life with stuff. And actually,
sometimes the thing people fear most is simply being still with themselves, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Because then you're kind of face-to-face with.
So I love that. The fact you call that out quite early on. You call out the fact that life is actually really complicated and there's a lot of kind of misery in the world. But even for those people who don't experience that themselves, there's a kind of, sometimes there's an inner emptiness that we all probably experience to some extent. And then you talk about the hospitality, and I just love that theme of, and it was difficult because as a non-believer, you're always trying to sort of work out where you can get the wisdom from. But I did find, actually, you know, you have to do a little bit of legwork with a book that's, you know, written for predominantly Christian audience, I imagine. Someone who's, people who are steeped in theology, it probably helps that. But actually, I think, you know, the Jacob passage is a great example of this, I think. You know, I started thinking about my friend who's now, who's estranged from his brother. And he's going through that situation in his life. And so you, I found when I was reading the book, you really can sort of take away and look at aspects of your own life through these kind of, even though they're quite, as you say, they're quite provocative stories, they really help you think about how you maybe deal with some of the provocative parts of your own life.
Yeah. I mean, in your journey, as you went to church, tried praying, you also obviously tried to read the Bible as well and get engaged with. What was that like as someone who isn't a Christian but was kind of trying to get to grips with this very ancient book, which obviously many people still believe speaks to us today through its pages?
Yeah, it's an interesting experience because I tried to leave my preconceptions at the door when reading the Bible, but obviously when you're engaging with something that is kind of out of step with a modern mind, if you like, when you're thinking about talking about the Christmas story, there's an episode which you're actually in, Justin, episode 3, which, you know, I track the Christmas story and what does it actually mean? You know, it's not about Father Christmas and presents and family feasts and things like that. It's actually about something else quite radical. And there's littered bits along the way where you kind of go, oh, virgin births or, you know, stars in the sky and things like that. And you have to kind of filter some of that stuff out to get to the meaning, really, I think, or the bits that really feel meaningful. Those bits feel less meaningful as a non-believer. It's hard to wrap your head around those. But if you can, if you're willing to do that, there's real gold in there. And the Christmas story suddenly becomes about something about, you know, God sending, you know, the most important thing in his life is born in a barn, is not born in the hotel, is not born in a 5-star luxury resort. And what does that then tell you and challenge you to do as a, even as a non-believer?
Yeah, I mean, Chris, in a sense, you wrote the book, I guess, predominantly for Christians.
I did.
Because even Christians can find the Bible strange at various points. And you tell quite funnily the story of how when you were given your first Bible after becoming a Christian, you were given a highlighter pen and you were like, well, what do I do with this? And presumably I highlight the bits I like or agree with, and what do I do with the rest then? And that in a way the book is trying to, I suppose, both for people like Tom and Christians too, say, what do we do with all the bits that are not very obvious or don't necessarily paint God in the way that sometimes our churches like to sort of speak of God? And I think that's really helpful, because actually it's helpful just to admit the Bible and its descriptions of God can sometimes be quite strange to us as modern 21st century people. And I guess you can sympathise with Tom's sort of struggles with the Bible.
And there's an interesting connection here. So I'm really with you about kind of momentarily suspending disbelief so that you can enter in. That's what I do when I go to the cinema. So I'm going to. I'm a big Star Wars fan. I sit with my 8-year-old. He's a big Star Wars fan. We're currently reading an encyclopedia of Star Wars vehicles. Who knew there would be 350 different Star Wars vehicles? And it's anyway. He loves it, and you know, he gets really excited about it. But when you go to the movies and those words begin to come up on the screen, a long time ago in a galaxy far away, you're leaving this world and you're entering another world, and it's got its own set of values. And so you know a speaking kind of, I don't know what he is, Jar Jar Bings, a kind of half human, half, I don't know, donkey guy with a kind of strange American accent, you know. And you go, okay, they've all got American accents. I'm going to just not be bothered by that. I'm just going to enter into this and enjoy the story and allow it to envelop me. And there is something very appropriate about doing that with the Bible, that you are entering another world. You are allowing this story to kind of grab you and help you understand stuff. And I think that's appropriate. But there's another half, and it's going back to the highlighter pen bit. So do I just look over the bit, ignore the bits that I don't like because they're awkward? And that can happen either way. So it can be, Christians can sometimes ignore the bits that really challenge us. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I want to live a middle class life where I get to, you know, do whatever I want. And the Bible's going to be my little, I suppose, mascot to help me get through tough times.
You know? Nice verse of the day to put on the fridge to encourage me, but not necessarily the ones that are the most challenging.
No, and definitely not the ones that are in my God is Stranger book. Not the ones where God says, I'm going to chop you up and, you know, send bits of you to your lovers. No, not that bit. And not the bit where, you know, two angels are nearly gang raped in Sodom. That's not going to make your average fridge magnet. Mm. So I both really like the momentarily suspending disbelief so I can enter in. But I don't want to just work around the bits that are actually going to challenge me, whether that's, you know, changing my lifestyle or provoking me to think, okay, for example, the miraculous, some people edit them out and say, well, that's just not believable. I'll find the story that's going to make me feel better. But actually, the Bible does claim that miraculous stuff is historical. Mm. And then we're in trouble, aren't we? Like, what do we do with that? Because if the miraculous is historical, then that's part of the reason why I believe in God. So I really like your momentarily suspending disbelief, but I think sometimes we need to go, hold on, pause. How does what I'm hearing here relate to what I think out here? Because the Bible isn't supposed to be a movie experience where you're just in fantasy land. It's supposed to be life direction set in. And I was thinking about your idea of, you know, jumping in with both feet. For me, the Bible's a little bit like a travel guide. It's supposed to be a direction setting thing about how we live our lives. And travel guides, I've met people that read travel guides in their armchair, you know, how to scale, you know, Everest, and they're reading it in their armchair with the fire by the side. And oh, that would be nice if everyone wanted to kind of scale Everest. But the book comes alive when you're actually trying to climb a mountain. And I think that's how I read the Bible. The Bible is supposed to be, you know, God's big picture, and we're given a role to play in that. And so for me, the Bible comes alive when we're fighting injustice, when we're welcoming, you know, vulnerable children into our lives, when we're speaking up for the oppressed, when we're, you know, trying to share the grace and compassion of God in word and deed. Suddenly it's alive because I've got to live this stuff rather than a fireside book. It might be interesting if I was...
Mm, yeah.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, let's take a quick break. We'll go to a break slightly early, and we'll take a bit more time in the second part of today's show and continue this conversation. My guests today, Krish Kandiah and Tom Newman, joining me to talk about their search for God. For Krish, it's in the pages of a book that has been nominated for the Theseus Ramsey Prize, God is Stranger. For Tom, it's been in his own journey looking for faith and whether it makes sense as he's, you know, taken the plunge and gone to church as an agnostic, tried praying and reading the Bible. And we'll be continuing to talk about that in the rest of today's show. This is Unbelievable with me, Justin Brierley, bringing you conversations that matter every week.
In a world where fake news is taken at face value and fiction has become fact, how do we share true faith in Jesus? Unbelievable The Conference 2019 will equip a new generation to speak truth in a post-truth world. Join me, Justin Brierley, and a team of world-class speakers ready to give reasons for Christian hope in today's skeptical world. Unbelievable The Conference 2019, Saturday the 20th of July in London. Brought to you in partnership with ADF International and Viola Apologetics. Book now at premierchristianradio.com speakingtruth.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Welcome back to the second part of today's show. Very much an open-ended conversation on today's programme between my two guests. One is an agnostic. He is Tom Newman, and he's behind a new podcast, which we featured the first episode of on Unbelievable back in May. It's called Hiding in Plain Sight, and it's just really about his search for faith as an agnostic, visiting churches, engaging in Christian practices. And Tom's come in to talk to Krish Kandaya, who's one of our speakers at this year's Unbelievable Conference in just a week's time. And really, on the back of the book that Krish has been nominated for this year's Ramsey Prize for, God is Stranger, Finding God in Unexpected Places. And Krish was just talking there about the, you know, the way he's trying to open up the Bible and some of the bits that Christians sometimes struggle to understand or get to grips with. Tom, did you find that the same bits that Krish is kind of expounding on were the same bits that you find confusing or difficult when it came to engaging with the Bible?
Not always. As a non-believer, you're not wedded to the idea that God needs to be perfect or that you have a necessary preconception of what God's character is. Actually, one of the interesting things about a Christian life experiment is you actually realize that the Christian story is not what you think about. I mean, as a non-believer, I probably thought it was about living a good life and just making sure you're a good person and love your neighbor and that's it.
And you'll get to heaven, sort of.
And you'll get to heaven. Right. When actually, the story's got this huge grand narrative from start to end, which you talk about in the book, that is very different to that, about restoring of a garden and how you can live a godly life on earth and, you know, be God's hands and ears on earth, that sort of thing. So when you're reading a bit, like one of the pieces that Trish talks about in the book is around Adam and Eve's story and God obviously expelling Adam and Eve from the garden. You know, I wasn't necessarily shocked by that because, I didn't really think that I didn't have a preconception that God should or shouldn't do it.
Right.
I was interested in just what Krish's take was on it. And you'd use a good analogy of your daughter on the top of a garden shed and her jumping off and breaking her leg. and then, you know, what that means then for as a parent, your response to when your child does that is, you know, actually you're not going to go to swimming class and you won't be able to do this. And God's response is something similar. And I like that. Just thinking about that idea that you put forward there in terms of, you know, actually what is God trying to do and what does the natural law of the universe as Christians see it, what is that saying? It's different to what I would see it as. So that is quite challenging. You know, it's a very different way of looking at the world in which we live in. So that's for me where the challenge probably lies is we probably share a huge amount of commonality in some of the things that we think are priorities for the way we should live. Reading Krish's book, you quite realise that you haven't maybe lived the life that you thought you had. You know, one minute you're in Lebanon and one minute you're you know, all over the world, and it's quite an extraordinary tale. I love the bits you weave in about your family story and the dinner table and things like that. But we probably do share some common things around parenting. But the challenging elements of the Bible and reading your book are the bits where there's sort of claims about the way the universe is or the way the natural order of things is.
You find harder to kind of digest in that sense.
It's very hard.
And by that, do you mean, well, as you were saying before, the miraculous claims, essentially?
Absolutely,
that,
yeah.
And would that include, I guess, the central claim of Christianity, Jesus' resurrection? That's a kind of thing that's like a kind of, okay, if I'm going to, that's the hard bit, these sorts of claims that are written down in these pages.
Yeah, if I was to sort of stress one thing to Christian listeners or people who think, I think it's sometimes underestimated what a chasm that is, actually, between for a non-believer. You know, those miraculous, they're very, very difficult to engage with. And in my Christian journey, there were often some of the hardest bits for me were some of those pieces. And that's why I talked about them as bugs in the show. And I talk about them as sort of, you know, wanting to not to ignore them, but not wanting them to sort of slow me down in terms of experiencing other bits.
And is that just because they seem so alien to your experience? Is it because you would say, I've always, you know, gone with the view that, you know, science explains things and things take their natural course, and this just seems alien and bizarre? I'm putting words in your mouth here, but what's the reason for you finding that so jarring, miraculous claim.
We might take words out of someone else's mouth. You had an interesting conversation with a poet on your podcast recently, and the American guy. And
Micah Bonet. Yeah.
Yeah, really interesting. I was listening to it, and he talks about, you know, virgin births don't happen, and these things don't actually happen day to day. But as a Christian, you've got to have this kind of almost creative faith moment where you've just got to accept, I think it was Michael's words. And that moment is probably something you don't have a lot of choice about, I imagine. And for me, it's never been something I felt compelled to step across that chasm. And, right. I don't know how I would even do it.
What it would take. Because for all the things that you experienced that were positive in your experience, there was a point at which you haven't been able to take that, if you like, step into you can appreciate the story, but living in that story means kind of committing yourself to these things are true, and that's not been something you've yet been able to do.
So my experience of Christianity, therefore, you know, the meal that you talk about, don't just read off the menu, have the meal. I did have a meal. I tried to actually not just read off the menu.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's parts of that meal that I felt you can't have unless you're able to make the leap of faith. And so it is limited. I couldn't profess to have had a full Christian experience in my show. There's elements that you can't fully take on, and so you're left with trying to sort of wrestle with the philosophy. And there's loads of philosophy in your book. You might not call it that, but when you do a bit of legwork for myself, it becomes philosophy. Mm. And I really appreciated that about some of the stories that you sort of pluck out for readers, because you can wrestle with them.
It's fascinating, Tom. I mean, I love your experiment. I love your attitude. I think it's amazing. And the idea, I guess it's a little bit like the old way that people used to get glasses, you know, or buy reading glasses. They didn't go to the optician. They didn't get the kind of formal diagnosis. They just went into the shop, probably Boots, and started just trying stuff on and seeing what helped you see better. And so this idea of trying on Christianity, I think there's a lot of wisdom in that, and the Bible seems to encourage it. But you're right, there is also a crossover moment where it goes from being an interesting idea or a fun story to making some real world claims. And I can understand why the miraculous could be a stumbling point, you know, a trip moment, as it were, a bug in the system. And I think there's two things I think about that. So sometimes Christians lead with the miracles, you know, we'll start there. If you can't believe the miracles, it's not worth you reading the rest of the book. And I'm going, well, no, actually, you're trying something very different. Let's live the life. Let's try the glasses on. Do they help me see better? And maybe I get to the point where I say, okay, I actually like this. This does make sense. Let's go revisit those miracles and see if they're as big a stumbling block as I thought they were. So I think that's one way of looking at it. But I think the miracles are there to help people cross over. So, for example, and please, listeners, be careful. I'm not claiming this, but, you know, we're in a studio. And let's claim, I want to claim that I'm God, you know, I'm the Messiah, right? And to help you know that I'm the Messiah, Tom, I'm going to make a prophetic prediction, right? That, you know, this, here's some water here, it's been chilled, okay? I reckon in about an hour, it's going to get to room temperature.
Whoa.
Right? Yeah, put
big,
it out
big
there,
claim
right?
There,
it's big. Right? So, I mean, that kind of prediction's pretty likely to come true, right? But it's got no persuasive power to it, because you could explain it through, you know, the laws of thermodynamics and, you know, heat dissipation or whatever it is. So the fact that it fits with the normal run-of-the-mill scientific explanation of the world doesn't actually help to persuade you. So what would it take for me to persuade you? Well, you know, Jesus goes, well, how about I turn it into wine? Okay, that's a game changer. That's a bit of evidence that says you're more than just some guy who's, you know, did A-level physics. You actually might be more than that. And so I think the miracles were designed to persuade people. Now, the interesting thing about miracles in the Bible is they're not just like David Blaine kind of miracles, you know, where he'll do something random, a card trick or, you know, whatever it is. The miracles recorded, particularly in the Gospels, are demonstrations of the character of God at the same time. So Jesus doesn't just kind of write in the sky, you know, a little message. There's someone that's sick. And he heals them because God's compassionate and gracious. He isn't just showing off. He's demonstrating who he is in his character, but also, I guess, that he really is who he says he is by doing something that's out of the ordinary. But I love your idea that you might not start there. it might be something that you come back to later, having explored the implications. Because I think for a lot of people, they don't even want to look at the miracles because they're nervous of the implications. They think, if I believe this stuff, it's actually going to mean quite a radical change to my life, and I'm not ready to make that. Because we're not just rational beings being persuaded by the evidence. I think we can see that in some of the debates that are going on around Brexit, and you know, it's not a rational debate, actually. There's a whole bunch of emotions and other things that are going on, and so we can't even look at the evidence sanely because we're already kind of bought into one system or another. So I love the idea that you're kind of fleshing it out. What does it look like? How does the bigger story work out? And then maybe loop back to that. Well, okay, now that I know what's happening, how much of a big deal are these miracles? And are they a game changer for me, or are they a game over for me and I can't really go any further?
Yeah, I find that really interesting, because I think when I'm reading the stories, like the Jacob story that you talk about, or the Adam and Eve story in the book, you're looking for, and I think the Christianity has this, it maps onto everyday life in an incredible way, and I think that's part of its strength. And I really experienced that when I sort of tried Christian clothes on for a while, is, despite the fact that some of these claims might be unbelievable, they are also unbelievable in the sense of how relevant they seem to your life. So I think you're absolutely right. The miraculous is intertwined with the mundane in some ways. The ordinary sort of truths of the Bible are very much linked. You know, Jesus comes to earth on Christmas Day, and you know, he's born in a barn. That's a miracle. But he's born in a barn, and he's born in poverty, in very unsalubrious circumstances. Right. That has a sort of ordinary truth to it as well that I think we can all take away. I think, nevertheless, it's very difficult to engage with the extraordinary elements of the truth. It's not that I think, you know, I can just easily decouple them from each other and separate the Bible out into philosophy and things. I recognise that you can't, but I feel like I'm left with no other choice but to do that.
And what was your view of the people who are at that place that you spoke to and engaged with, where they can recognise the value, in a sense, you know, the of the story and the values and everything it might speak into someone's life, but also kind of did hold on to the reality of these stories as you know, historical, and that miracles really happened and Jesus really was God and rose from the dead and everything else. Did you find like that the way they got there was not the way you were going to get there if you did ever get there? I don't know what your experience was of the people and the way that they said they'd found God ultimately.
Yeah, well, I mean, we all I have friends, very very close friends, who you have obvious differences to. I think so. Having differences between people, even between non-believers, it's very very common, right?
Yeah.
So we all have people who are close to us who we think, oh, how did you reach that opinion? Maybe they voted one way and you voted the other. They voted for Brexit and you didn't. Whatever it is, you know, my family's Welsh and Wales is very very split down the Brexit line. Half my family voted one way and the other rest of us voted the other. And you think, well, how on earth did you get to that conclusion? I started thinking of it. Did either of you play computer games when you were young?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was a bit of an addict, to be honest.
Oh, right. Brilliant. So this analogy hopefully is not going to be lost in you. I started thinking of it as sort of, you know, one of those sort of suspended platforms you might get on Super Mario.
Yeah.
Where it's kind of, there's no, you can't really see how the platform is suspended in midair. You have absolutely no, it doesn't seem to be any mechanical thing. It's not, there's no ladder going up to it, it's just there. I started thinking of it a little bit like that. Like, you know, a friend might be on the platform telling me about this platform and what it's like up here. You've got no idea how to get up to that platform. There doesn't seem to be any way to get up there at all. But nevertheless, you're either left with the choice of ignoring them and saying, oh, that's just ridiculous, that platform's absurd.
Yeah.
Or you can ask questions, well, what's it like up there? And what do you see? And even though I felt I couldn't make the jump up there, I could close my eyes and hear what they were saying and sort of say, well, actually, what does that mean for me down here? And that's the way I started thinking about it.
I mean, in Mario, you've got the hidden spring and you get the big mushroom and that's your way onto the platform. But it doesn't quite work the same way with faith, does it?
Well, you say that.
Are you going to draw some random analogy from
try.
My Super
no,
Mario?
No, keep it going.
So, well, it's really interesting. I think this kind of common ground that you find a lot of the Christian life fits in with what you already think. So we talk about, we've got a lot of common ground in terms of parenting or things that we aspire for our children, probably quite a few shared moral values, maybe even politically, you know, maybe we think refugees should be welcome, you know. So we'll find some common ground together. And the big question for me is, well, how do we get there? And you mentioned, I thought it was fascinating when you talked about the things that coming into Christianity, you realise how rich the cultural heritage of Christianity is. So, you know, if you go down to Oxford University and you look at their little plaque, you know, it's "The Lord is my light" is the motto for Oxford University. And you go, oh, look, there's a bit of Christianity. Or, you know, a lot of the laws that we have in our country are built on a kind of Christian moral framework. And I think this common ground that we've got actually is worth exploring. There's a new movie about to come out that Richard Curtis has put together called Yesterday. I don't know if you've seen the premise of the film.
Oh, is it the one about the guy who... The Beatles suddenly never existed. And
yes.
He's the only person in the world who knows the Beatles songs.
Yeah.
And
what a great premise.
Achieves worldwide fame. He does. Basically.
He does. He just blatantly riffs off all the Beatles songs and sings them again. And no one's ever heard them before. But because they're so brilliant, they just make him a megastar.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a little bit like Christianity in the world. It's like people have forgotten the Christian heritage. They don't know that why the laws are there, why the institutions are there, why many of the values that we hold in the West actually have their origin. In fact, I think Tom Holland was on your show. And, you know, he's a brilliant historian. Did you hear that episode?
It was great.
It was so powerful.
He's got a new book coming out on exactly this.
Dominion, yeah. I want to buy it. Is it out? Or?
It's out in September, yeah. I'm sure we'll get him on.
Because he's tracing it. He's exploring the Romans, and he's going, you know what? Roman values are rubbish. You know, we don't care about the vulnerable. If a child is born deformed, we'll leave it exposed. I'm not Roman. And although maybe he might have the same trip-up issues with, you know, some of the miracles and stuff they're reading, ethically, I'm Christian. So it's like, I've forgotten the Beatles. You know, the Beatles never exist, but the songs make sense and they resonate. And so the values that Christians hold actually make sense of the things that we value most. You know, the individual dignity of human life, everyone has a right to vote. Well, why? In the ancient world, not everybody did. You know, rich people did, or, you know, powerful people did, but not plebs and peasants. So a lot of the things I think that we value most in Western culture owe their origin to the Christian faith. And we've forgotten that there was a Christian faith, but we still like the values. And I think, as you're saying, Tom, I don't think you can take the Christian values and not take Jesus. That's like cultural appropriation. That's like saying, you know, I don't like black people, but I like hip-hop. That's not fair. You know, it's a package deal that the Christians would say, well, I would say as a Christian, that I believe these values and these things because of Jesus. And if Jesus is not who he says he was, if he isn't God on earth, then he's a lunatic or a liar or, you know, or something else. But if he is who he said he is, then suddenly the values kind of make sense and the miracles undergird the fact that his claims are real. That's my framework and how I got there. And I guess, you know, we try to do it in the Faithism book. Let's find some common ground. And then let's do a bit of kind of cultural archaeology to say, well, how do we get there? And if you take Christianity out of the picture, what are you left with? Where do we ground those values and ideas? So I love your experiment. I'm looking forward to hearing more of the podcast.
I'm going to ask you a hard question, Tom, which is, do you feel like the experiment kind of got you to a point where you decided, I can make a decision on this now, and I don't think ultimately I'm going to be a Christian, or is it, you know, a work in progress? Is there potentially a part two, I suppose, to your story?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And without giving away the ending of the series, I do talk about a fork in the road moment. I think you're right to mention it. I thought, as I was doing the series, what I would be advocating for at the end, I had this sensation, and I still in part have it, so I'm still wrestling with it in some sense. I thought I would argue for at the end a sort of Christianity 2.0, where you kind of strip out all of the stuff that, you know, people might refer to as nonsense, or, you know, all the miracles and all those sorts of things, and you just try and leave behind the bones of what can be a really challenging, maybe much needed in current times, philosophy for, you know, it's quite countercultural and provocative, and I really like those elements of it. But I came to a similar place to you, maybe not bang on, but similar place to you, Chris, that I felt like, is that saying, you know, don't chuck my devils away or my angels will go too. I felt like the things that I saw as devils within Christianity, the things that I really struggled with, the physical claims about you know, early humans and all of that stuff, the really challenging stuff, I found Yeah, it is wedded to Christianity in such a powerful way. For example, the ultimate end point, I guess, is that you're either in Jesus or you're not. Even the most open-minded, you know, the people, a lot of the people you have on the show, and you mention it a little bit in your book as well towards the end, Krish, you have to kind of make a choice. You can't really take Jesus, but leave all, you know, half of it behind. And I felt like, to use your Beatles analogy, there was a thing that was beyond evidence. It was more emotional at the end. There was the evidential stuff, and there's that stuff which I've spoken about. But there was also, I guess, an aesthetic or a theological point that I couldn't get over, a hurdle, which was, can you only just listen to the Beatles for the rest of your life? You know, the Beatles, and I would agree, and I went to Liverpool Uni just because I'm a Beatles fan.
So
I love the Beatles, and we can spend the rest of the podcast talking about them. But I do also love the Kinks,
right.
And I do, you know, also love Radiohead. You know, you're a Radiohead fan, Chris, aren't you?
That makes three of us.
Yeah, you know, right. I think the challenge in Christianity, as I see it, and as it's been presented to me, is just to be a Beatles fan for the rest of your life. And I feel that that is a really hard thing to imagine doing, is not holding up other wisdom or other songs
The same. Well, this is so interesting. So this is sort of obviously something that you feel you'd be losing out if you were to embrace in that sense.
Yeah.
What's your response to that, Krish?
I'm very glad we're all into the same music.
And computer games.
Now we need to hang out, play computer games and play old records together. This sounds like
this is like I've
evening.
Gone back to my 14-year-old self suddenly.
This is a podcast.
Listening to Radiohead, playing computer games. Yeah. Anyway, carry on.
So, I hear you that there's this perception that if you become a Christian, you're suddenly rubbishing everything else that's out there. You can only be a Beatles fan. And for me, it doesn't quite work like that. You know, even in the Bible, right? You got the Proverbs, which are they're called the wisdom literature in the middle of the Bible, and you may even know some of the Proverbs. They become part of kind of common parlance, and that is basically some sages or some wise old men traveling the world, finding wisdom, and they'll take it from anywhere. They don't care where it is. I mean, in one sense, you could say this idea that all truth is God's truth. So Christians don't have to be afraid of truth wherever they find it. You know, my son's studying maths and physics because he's a Christian and he loves maths and physics and he thinks that will help him understand the world better. My other son's a fine art student. He's a Christian and he wants to learn from the Pre-Raphaelites and enjoy what they've got to bring to the world. So it is in a sense that, you know, once you become a Christian, you've got to burn all your other books and only read the Bible because that's the only thing that's got any truth in it. We don't believe that. We believe God is truthful, and therefore we can find his truth in art, in nature, we can find it in science, and it's not contradictory. That's fine. But I think there is something also about the exclusive claims of Jesus, and it's a little bit like getting married. So when I got married, I said that I would be faithful to my wife. And on my marriage, on the day of my marriage, I didn't go, oh no, that means I'm never going to be able to date again. There are no more women for me. It didn't seem like a loss. It felt like a gain. In fact, Jesus told a parable about it. He says, you know, the kingdom of God is like a man who finds treasure hidden in a field. So he goes off and he gladly sells everything he can in order to buy the field that he might have the treasure. And he's not going, oh, I've lost all my stuff. He's saying, I'm gaining the field. I'm gaining the treasure. It's worth it. And love has that kind of power over us, you know. So I love my wife, you know, we're very different people, but I love her to bits. I'm not feeling like I've lost anything by committing into an exclusive relationship with her. I think I've gained something. And so that's how I see Christianity. It's an exclusive relationship in that I am going to serve God. I'm not going to serve another God. I'm going to serve this God. But that God is the God of the universe, and he's hidden his truth all sorts of places that I can enjoy discovering.
Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think I understand more now. And I think I was probably close-minded at sort of going back a few years ago. I couldn't quite understand how someone like yourself could make that jump. I probably would have always felt like, actually, you know, surely you couldn't, you know, engage in that sort of marriage or that sort of commitment. I feel like I understand it for other people more than I do now. I think where I've come to, back to your sort of question about that fork in the road moment, is it doesn't feel like a choice that I would want to make for myself. As you know, if I'm in charge of my own presence, preferences, if you like. It wouldn't be something that I would, a marriage I'd want to commit into. I think I'd maybe look elsewhere. So that's why I've kind of arrived at Christianity, is kind of an appreciation of it. I even feel I understand a little bit better why you would discipline your life around this kind of commitment. I think there's huge merit in that, but for me it just something jars with me about that final choice, right. That final decision that you have to make, that you're almost compelled to make. You had someone on the show recently, I've forgotten her name, who was talking about it's the most inclusive but also the most exclusive idea that we have, and throughout your book, Trish,
I think that was Christy Mayer, also at the Theatre's conference. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a brilliant episode. She was talking with the religious fictionalist, which raises this issue quite well, I think. Yeah. And I think she was right to challenge Philip on that. I think, you know, the challenge with religious fictionalism is probably the same one. it's actually there is an exclusiveness to it. And you've got to make a choice about that. And I'm kind of still sort of jilting at the altar a little bit.
Oh, good metaphor. Yeah, I mean, the idea of the fork in the road is an interesting one, because it sounds like you can come to a stop and I'm not going to choose that way and I'm not going to choose that way. I'm just going to live in the undecided moment. The thing is that time is marching. You know, we're moving all the time, and actually every day we're making decisions, and those decisions are formed and shaped by a philosophy of the world, or, you know, a theology, however you want to frame it. So, you know, choosing what I do with my career next, that's a decision I've got to make, and I'm either going to make that decision based on God being in the universe or God not being in the universe. So one of the challenges about, I would say, agnosticism is it sounds like I can live an uncommitted life. I don't have to decide one way or another. But actually, every day that you make an ethical decision, every day that you decide what to do with your money, or I decide what to do with my money, or my career, or how I'll treat my kids, I'm actually committed to something, and that's getting worked out in my life. So I think philosophically it might be possible to be agnostic, but practically we're all committed to something. We're either living a life committed to Jesus, or a life committed to Allah, or a life committed to atheism, but we are committed people. I don't know. Do you feel that's an unfair description of agnosticism?
I think that's fair. Though I wouldn't say I stayed at the fork in the road. I don't think I'm in some sort of stasis where I'm just always going to be coming back to this question constantly.
Right.
I think, you know, I have taken a route.
Yeah.
And I think what I would say is I've taken the bits that I can of Christianity. Mm. Although, you know, some people feel that you can't take those bits with you, but I feel like I have. I've taken what I can, at least, with me on the journey that I'm continuing down, and I'll be committing and recommitting to other things throughout my life. But that question of whether to become a Christian, I felt like I couldn't take it at that point.
That's interesting.
We'll come back for a final few minutes of discussion. Really interesting, open-ended conversation today on Unbelievable between my guests, Krish Kandiah and Tom Newman, talking about searching for God. Krish's book, God is Stranger, that's well worth a look if you're interested in looking at some of the stranger ways in which God is announced and announces himself to people in Scripture. And that's not a bad thing, says Krish. Krish will also, as I've said, be speaking at this year's conference in just a week's time. Tom's going to be there, I think, as a punter, which will be great. So you might just bump into them both if you come along. Do make sure to get yourself booked in. This is your last chance, really, with the conference just a week away. PremierChristianRadio.com/unbelievable conference, and we'll be back for the final part of today's discussion very shortly.
Premier Christianity Magazine. In this month's issue,
Old Testament stories containing the torture, rape, or murder of women come under the spotlight. In light of the Me Too movement, we ask, as Christians, how should we read these passages today? Plus, find out what true racial diversity could look like in our churches. And discover the article your pastor wishes you'd read, but is too embarrassed to ask.
For your free copy, visit premierchristianity.com/free sample.
Welcome back to Unbelievable here on Premier Christian Radio. And don't forget that you can find out much more about Unbelievable and all the things we offer from our website at premierchristianradio.com. There you'll find links to the app, the newsletter, the video channel. By the way, today's show is being filmed for video. It's available over at the YouTube channel. And you can find things like the book and the events and all the other resources that we're resourcing you with these days. Of course, course, the big one coming up is Unbelievable, the conference here in the UK, Saturday the 20th of July at Westminster Central Hall. Looking forward to sharing a brilliant day with hundreds of Unbelievable fans and 13 international Christian thinkers. I won't run through all the things we've got on offer again on the day. Just go and check them out at the website and get yourself booked in. PremierChristianRadio.com/Unbelievable Conference. I should say that Bruxy Cavey, who's one of our speakers at this year's conference, is having a little gathering as well the day before with some like-minded friends, pastors and ministry leaders. It's called the Jesus Collective, and they're having a regional gathering in London at Westminster Central Hall on Friday the 19th of July between 2 and 6pm. They'll be sharing a vision for their Jesus-centred network that they're shaping. JesusCollective.com. Do get along if you're in church leadership of some kind and interested in hearing more about it. It'll be a good sort of pre-event as well to the conference. Looking forward to having Bruxy in the country. We're going to be doing an edition of Unbelievable with him while he's over as well. And US friends and Canadian friends, people in North America generally, don't worry, we're not leaving you out in the cold this year. We've got something really exciting booked in for October, and we'll be releasing the ticketing very soon for that. Some really exciting names joining me for Unbelievable Live in the USA, in Los Angeles specifically. Calvary Chapel Costa Mesa is where we'll be doing it. We're doing it in partnership with the fantastic church there, led by Brian Broderson. And you'll be hearing who we're getting together in conversation for the big conversation live on Friday the 11th of October, followed by Unbelievable, the Conference USA at Calvary Chapel, with some fantastic speakers as well across the course of Saturday, the 12th of October. So keep an eye out for when we're releasing the website for where you can get the tickets for that. But ring fence it in your diary if you possibly can. Towards the end of today's show, we'll be getting some of your feedback to recent editions of the programme. If you can continue listening after Unbelievable here on Premier, we'll be hearing the profile. Ben Lindsay is the guest of Ruth Jackson on today's show. He's a black church leader pastoring a predominantly white congregation. His new book is on racism and the church. It's called We Need to Talk About Race. That's on the profile between 4 and 5 this afternoon, or on its own profile podcast. Next week here on Unbelievable, we're asking, should Christians embrace transhumanism? What is transhumanism, you may ask? You'll find out, because Micah Redding, who has started the Christian Transhumanist Association, will be on the show debating that subject with Nigel Cameron, who's a bioethics and technology expert. So look out for that on your podcast feed or on your radio set. Same time next week.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
So we're concluding today's show, and it's been a real pleasure to be joined by Krish Kandai and Tom Newman on the programme today. Krish, just ahead of appearing at Unbelievable Conference 2019, where he'll be talking about how to create more confident conversations. Conversations matter is what he'll be talking about at the very beginning of the conference next Saturday. It's not just what you say, it's how you say it. And he'll be also, of course, riffing on his book, Faithism. Why Christians and Atheists Have More in Common Than You Think. Links to all of Krish's stuff, including his amazing work with Home for Good, from today's show. And if you want more about Tom Newman and his Hiding in Plain Sight podcast, do go and check it out. It's also available from today's webpage, and you can listen, and I'm sure you'll get drawn in as I was as soon as I started listening to the podcast, to Tom's journey. We've just got a few minutes, really, as we start to close out today's show. What kind of are any of the kind of remaining loose threads that you feel you'd like to pick up as we start to conclude today's conversation, Tom?
One of the things I definitely left my Christian life experiment thinking about, and I've not stopped thinking about it actually since it finished, was the role Christianity has now in culture, in particular UK culture. I think it has this, is in a very interesting position where it's a sort of quite a big and significant minority. You know, most people don't go to church, but the people that do have quite a powerful influence. They create these communities and they do a lot of social action. Every time I was in church, people were talking about fostering, they were talking about adoption. These are things that in part of South London we live in that you'll know better than anyone. We're crying out for people to offer safe respite for people on short-term, long-term basis, all this sort of stuff. And Christianity has a message that really compels people to act. And so I'm left with an unresolved idea, I guess, or sense that Christianity could play a really important role in influencing the rest of sort of secular culture. And I just wonder what you think about that and what role should become the new norm for Christians and non-believers alike.
And that's an interesting one, because to some extent it feels like we're living in ever more conflicted times. We seem to be, as we've talked about with Brexit and everything else, divided in so many ways. Whether or not you believe Christianity, at least there it looks like you've got the potential for churches and in the UK to do something that helps people come together again in some way and unites people, and potentially has the resources, as you've said so many times, Chris, to make a massive change in culture if we simply went and did what Jesus told us to do in all the communities where we do find ourselves.
I think, Tom, you've hit a fantastic question, and I'm grateful for your God experiment, your Christianity experiment. I think it's a brilliant idea. I think you're right. We are, as a Christian church, at an interesting crossroads. I hear sometimes within Christian circles that, you know, the culture's getting so fragmented, that there's so much challenge to the Christian faith. Maybe Christians should retreat. Maybe we should kind of hide and, you know, just batten down the hatches, take our kids out of normal school, you know, stop entering the world of politics, just retreat and see if we can kind of live a private Christian life, and hope everything, you know, just carries on without us. And Jesus was very clear that actually our job as a minority is to be there to bless and serve the majority. So sometimes the Bible uses the idea of light. So Jesus challenged the Christians. He said, you know, no one lights a light and then hides it under a cover. You're supposed to be the light for the world. Otherwise, how's the world going to know how to live? Or it says, what good is salt if it loses its saltiness? It's supposed to be out there kind of, well, they didn't have refrigerators back then. So you used to use salt to kind of stop meat going off. It was part to stop the rot, as it were. And I think Christians have that role. That's our calling. Jesus once said, let your light shine before people that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. In other words, the way that Christians live for others, serving others, are supposed to be the means by which people are supposed to know whether Christianity is true or not. Not just in what we say, but in what we do. So I think you're right to call us out on that. And it is one of the reasons, I mean, the primary reasons we started the Home for Good charity is that kids need homes. And without loving, secure homes, kids do not thrive. And kids, sadly, grow up, age out of the care system and end up in some pretty awful circumstances, you know, hugely overrepresented in our homeless population. Our kids that have aged out of foster care, our prisons, sadly, are hugely overrepresented by people that have aged out of foster care and end up getting criminalized. So the first reason we run this thing is kids need homes and they need to experience love and grace and compassion. But the second reason is if Christians live out that Christian life, that's incredibly visible and people can't help but wonder, is there some truth behind this thing? You know, is there more than, it's more than just words. We're sick to death of politicians who just have words. We want to see some authenticity, some truth, and I guess that's the opportunity for us. And it's one of the reasons I love Jesus, in that Jesus was described as the Word made flesh. So he didn't just come with a message, he was the message. And I think that's the call for the Christian church today. Live out what we believe. And, you know, hat off to you that you've stepped into that, but you've put on the Christian clothes. You've realised you can't separate Jesus from his message. And, you know, maybe at some point later in your life, some of these things that you've begun to explore may come back again. But I'm really grateful for the work that you've done and for putting it out there for people to really consider.
Thanks, Chris.
Yeah. Final thoughts?
Yeah. I met someone on my journey, a woman called Val, who was part of Chessington Evangelical Church, and she used a phrase that I thought about whilst I was reading your book, about the hospitality bits that you talk about in the book, that the idea that Jesus is constantly sitting down, he's either leaving a meal or he's going to a meal, yeah, or he's just been at a meal, or, you know, all that sort of stuff. She talked about the community they create in Chessington is about being in each other's lives in a very real way. And I think that the challenge is not just for Christians. I think the challenge is also for sort of non-religious community. Can you have a space? Can you create spaces? Open question. That where you bring people together, you encourage social action. You can also talk about complex ideas. I think that's the extra one that I struggle to find an analogy for outside of religion. Okay. Rugby clubs bring people together.
Yeah.
You do great things. You can even make friends. You can do all that sort of stuff. But go in there and start talking about redemption and some quite complex themes, you might get laughed out of there.
Right.
And Christianity has a way of doing all of those things in one place.
Mm.
And I'm not sure there's another version of that in secular culture. Yeah. And that's the thing I'm kind of... Maybe that's the thing we either can't create and just need to recognise that.
Mm.
Or maybe there needs more attempts to do that, because I think that's really important. Mm.
Yeah. That's good. So interesting. Thank you so much both for spending some time with me in studio today to talk about this. We're looking forward to seeing you both in a week's time at Unbelievable the Conference. For the moment, all the very best for the nomination. I think it gets revealed whether you've won this Ramsey Prize or not. You've got some stiff competition, I think.
I've been reading all the books and they are absolutely amazing. If you go on the Ramsey Prize website, it could be your summer reading list if you like theology and philosophy and thinking about big ideas. So they're all great and it's just an honour to be amongst them.
We'll find out. I think it's the Greenbelt Festival. It's being revealed, isn't it, this summer. But for the moment, thank you so much, guys. Such an interesting conversation. Do go and check out the websites as well, both my guests, krishkandaya.com. for Krish, hipspodcast.com for Tom's experiment with Christianity. And I'll make sure the links are all available from today's show, and we'll be hearing some of your responses to recent editions of the program as well very shortly. For now, thanks again, Tom and Krish, for being with me.
Thanks, Justin.
Good stuff.
Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Well, you can get in touch with the show by emailing me, unbelievable@premier.org.uk, or send me a text via Twitter, @unbelievablejb for the Twitter, facebook.com/unbelievablejb to leave a comment about today's programme there, or indeed find links to today's show at the website, premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. And that's also the place to go if you want to click through for this year's conference, where of course Krish will be speaking, and indeed Tom will be part of the listening, watching audience as well. Perhaps you'll get to interact with him as well. I'll get him to stick his hand up and let people know who he is at some point during the course of the day. Let's go to some of your feedback to last week's show. David Robertson joined us. He's a well-known Christian apologist here in the UK, about to do a long stint in Australia, however, and he was in conversation with Hannah Timpson, who's the former president of Humanist Students UK, giving their responses on that show to questions that kids ask about God. And we had a really interesting collection of questions from some of the young people I had recorded with. Well, David's out in Australia, says another great show this week. Great to hear David Robertson back on the programme. And yes, you can tell him I had assumed he'd been banned. I don't know where this idea got around that David had been banned just because he hadn't been on for a while. Anyway, you say stoked to hear that David's coming to Australia. Hopefully I get to see him on the East Coast sometime doing what he does best, messing with atheists. I've never seen him in real life. All the best with the conference. So wish I could be there. Maybe one day in Australia. Who knows? Maybe we could get to that side of the world one day, David. Julian Eckersley has said, really great programme with David Robertson and Hannah Timpson. Never written in before, but wanted to say how well the two guests handled the excellent questions posed by young people. I'm a Christian and I met you at the Unbelievable Conference before, but thought that Hannah answered the questions very well indeed and raised very legitimate points. I also thought that David did the same, and the whole programme was conducted in a pleasant, civil manner, very thought-provoking, encouraging me to look into the issues raised once again and to think through my own answers. Could you line the same guests up for another episode and get more searching questions from young people, please? We'll probably do another young people's questions episode, Julia. I don't know if specifically David and Hannah will be available again, but I agree. Great combination. This is Matt on Facebook, who says, I've listened to Unbelievable for a long time, been a great help thinking through many theological difficulties. The problem of pain comes up time and time again, as it did in this episode with David and Hannah. And while I'll never have the complete and all-encompassing answer, something I never hear mentioned but helped me move the ball a little further down the field in understanding is when I learned of CIPA, which is short for congenital insensitivity to pain and anhidrosis. As the name implies, it's when a person cannot feel pain. And what gave me pause is seeing it listed as a disease. The medical community does not see this as a gift to be envied, but a disease to be cured. Why? Because you may cut yourself and not feel it, and the cut becomes infected, a bone can break, and without realizing it, it'll never be set and heal properly. In other words, pain is there to tell us something is wrong and needs attention. Well, why didn't God create a world that didn't need pain to call attention to what's wrong? Well, the Christian response is he did, and we can read about it in Genesis 1 and 2. Since the time of the events of Genesis 3, pain tells us something is wrong, and the more serious the pain, the greater the physician needed. Just a few thoughts. Thanks for everything. On a personal note, I have a personal passion for history and archaeology, even going on a dig last year. I love debates on historical, biblical accuracies. Always look forward to those ones. Thanks and all the best. Thank you, Matt. Appreciate that. Yes, and there is something about our embodiedness as humans, isn't there? As we were talking about on that show about disability, where pain is part and parcel of what it means to be human and the way we engage the environment we find ourselves in. But one which we do believe as Christians, there's a hope that the things that are necessary, if you like, for survival today will be transcended in some glorious way in the future. But thank you very much for getting in touch. This one was from Eric and says, glad to have a show highlighting questions our Christian youth are asking. As you pointed out, many young people are leaving their faith because they don't feel that the church allows them to ask hard questions. I agree with Hannah. Christianity often appears to be indoctrination, but that only occurs when dialogue is shut down and questions discouraged. However, once questions are allowed to be raised and dialogue ensues, then it rises to the level of critical thinking. If we want the perception to rise above brainwashing, then we need to show the world that we're actually engaged in promoting good brain hygiene. I think that there are two main reasons why the church is unable to intellectually engage with its young people. Firstly, it's apologetically unprepared to answer them, preferring to bury its head in the sand. It's uncomfortable in its own wardrobe and fears being labelled a fashion mistake when it ventures out of its Christian closet. Secondly, it sadly underestimates God. If God created the universe, then he has the answers. If we don't broach a topic because we fear it may topple the faith of our children, then I'd say that we're not worshipping the one true God. God's a big boy and can stand up for himself. The bottom line is the church needs to apologetically prepare itself to give an answer for the hope it has. Interestingly, it sounded like some of the young people asking the questions were actually on the younger side, 10 to 11. I think we all too often save apologetics for high school and college students when it seems clear that from a very early age, children are asking substantive questions. I think we often dismiss the questions of the very young as naive when they may actually be quite profound. Thank you very much. And thanks for the kind words you included about the show as well, Eric. I agree with you. I think it's never too early to start answering, you know, the substantive questions of young people. And I think one of the great benefits in some ways of having a conversation with a young person or a child when it comes to apologetics and those big questions is you can't hide behind the language or the terminology that we might sometimes sort of smooch over something with. You sort of have to get down to their level and see, does it work at that level? And I think that's a good thing for all of us to do. Going back to some of the other shows we've done recently, firstly, the show on disability theology and healing. Stephen over at Queen Street Baptist Church in Canada said, very pleased to hear that episode. Thoroughly enjoyed it. As a parent of two children on the severe end of the autism spectrum, these things are very much on my mind. I completely agree that we should not assume people with disabilities want healing and should not impose healing prayer. If they request healing prayer, then we should respond accordingly. As for the question of God having a disability, I don't find the chariot from Ezekiel convincing. More compelling is the doctrine of the incarnation. The incarnation was a limitation that God the Son voluntarily took on, and that is a permanent condition even in heaven. Thanks for putting this important topic on the table. It was good for both my mind and heart. And Jeffrey Jones in Hamburg, New York says, I recently saw your tweet about 40% of UK residents being unsure about the historicity of Jesus Christ. Well, Unbelievable has had episodes in the past on the topic of mythicism and is overdue for some more. Narrow down discussions to specific issues within mythicism, e.g. have an episode with Richard Carrier on whether Mark's gospel is proof of historicity. Another episode could discuss Q. That's one of the gospel sources, of course, isn't it? Another one perhaps on the ascension of Isaiah, the epistle to the Hebrews and others. Thanks for the suggestions, Jeffrey. But the article you're referencing is one that I put out on the Unbelievable social media, went out on the newsletter this last week as well. My own writing on what I think the best responses are to the Jesus mythicists and those who are sceptical about Jesus. If you want to join up to the Unbelievable newsletter and get your own sort of fortnightly dose of stuff stuff that I think you'll enjoy as an Unbelievable listener. Do go to the Unbelievable website and click through to the link there, and we'll be happy to add you to the list. Now, just a few more before we close out today's show, and just going back to some of your comments, which we got a lot of, but I wasn't able to read that many of, on that abortion debate that we had recently on the show. Just released that actually over at the YouTube channel for Unbelievable, because we did film that one, but took a little while to get the film of it up. And so that's Ryan Christopher, one of the speakers at this year's Unbelievable conference, debating Barbara and Toomey on whether abortion is a human right. Got lots more comments coming in underneath that YouTube video now. It's available as well. But here's a few people responding to the show. First, Chris, who begins with some lovely words about the show, wanting to express my gratitude for it. You say, "I don't want to overstate this, but I liken it to the first C.S. Lewis book I read, Mere Christianity, which led me to reading and listening to every book he's written. Then I began reading authors he mentioned, and it led to others he hadn't mentioned, but who mentioned him, and so on. And your broadcast is much like this to me, a fountainhead that doesn't seem to run dry. I believe I will probably hear every episode on the podcast for the last 10 years before this year is up. I cannot get enough." Thank you so much. Glad to hear the show's been encouraging you and blessing you so much, Chris. Now, in regards to that show on abortion, you say in the last episode with Ryan and Barbara, she mentioned she was a Christian, yet I'd be curious as to how she'd answer these questions. Firstly, should a woman have the right to make an innocent baby pay for the sins of a wicked father in the case of rape or incest, quoting from Ezekiel 18:20? Second, should a woman have the right to end a process that God is clearly carrying out in the womb? And you give Psalm 139 as an example of where you'd point to in scripture for that. Number three, when has it ever worked out to devalue human life by not recognizing personhood just because it's legal? It resulted in slavery in the US before the Civil War, to genocide in Nazi Germany, and now to infanticide in states like New York and almost Virginia. Number four, logic and reason can only infer that under today's abortion laws, Mary would have been well within her rights to abort Jesus, and Elizabeth would have been well within her rights to abort John the Baptist. If God recognizes the fetus as a child within the womb and God's son was once one himself, how can it be anything less than murder to end the pregnancy of a child? And number five, all Christianity, Armenians, Calvinists, Catholics, etc., believe that God has foreknowledge of mankind. Knowing this and other passages like Leviticus 17:11, the life of the flesh is in the blood, shouldn't one conclude that life begins no later than at conception? So those were some of the questions that Chris wanted to ask of Barbara. By the way, you had a PS here. In one episode, you had two Americans debating who commented on your British accent, and you jokingly dismissed it, saying you didn't believe it really gave a 10 to 15% intelligence advantage, as most Americans presume. But it does. It really does. Well, I will play that advantage for all it's worth. Totally undeserved, but yes. Julia, on this subject, says, "Hats off to Ryan for his incredibly articulate defence of human life. His end of the debate was factual, logical and completely scientific. His arguments were set out in a way that made me realise how the pro-life argument is so firmly rooted in science, logic and common sense. On the other hand, Barbara was repetitive, illogical and seemed not to understand the key points that were discussed and only had one answer to everything. Choice. She even failed to understand the basic point that Ryan had about waving his hands in the air versus waving them in her face. It was actually quite embarrassing to listen to, and if this is the best argument that the pro-choice movement can make, I am not convinced." Here's one with thoughts on both sides of this from, I think it's Kwan in Singapore. Says, "Great job arranging a discussion of such an important cultural issue. I think your pro-choice guest Barbara might not have been the best person to have in the discussion. She seems unequipped with facts and data to counter those that Ryan brought up. But personally, I feel like both camps, pro-life and pro-choice, are inadequate in handling the issue of abortion." And you say, "Here are the failures of the pro-choice camp. The pro-choice camp's view of dehumanising the fetus is mind-boggling, which Ryan has properly challenged. Their view that life can only be considered human once outside of the womb is unscientific and just purely a subjective view, which they want to push as objective. My feeling is that they do this to rationalise the killing of the fetus so as to remove the guilt that may be associated with taking away a life. Pro-choice supporters will often use the reasoning that we cannot give the fetus human rights based on the potential of it becoming a human. However, there are a lot of things that we give value based on its potential. A fresh graduate isn't given their pay based on what they can do, but on what they can potentially achieve. An investment isn't made based on what it is now, but on the potential of its growth. The examples are plenty. But then you say failures of the pro-life. Where I stand in agreement with Barbara is that we cannot place a law that forces women to go through the full term of pregnancy. To be more specific, such laws should not be implemented without allowing provision and support for the mother after the birth of the child. We cannot assume that all women would be capable physically, mentally and financially to care for a child. The laws that are being implemented in some states in America, like Alabama, would lead to other issues. Abandonment of infants, maybe even some forms of infanticide, the illegal trade of children, etc. And Barbara also mentioned there'd be higher demand for illegal sources of abortion, which may not be safe for women. Ultimately, say, I feel the best route would be some form of middle ground, similar to what you guys have in the UK now, but with more transparency in the abortion process. Okay, thanks very much, Kwan, writing in from Singapore. And a final one from Ian. It says, very interesting and troubling addition. The debate on abortion, usually couched in terms of pro-choice versus pro-life. The pro-choice side emphasised the importance of a woman's body, arguing the woman must have the right to do what they want with their bodies. The pro-life side emphasising the right of the unborn child. It's entirely understandable, and I'm amazed and appalled at the number of pro-choicers who seem to assign zero importance to the life that's within the room, and which they seem to have no qualms at all about ending. The few seem to be evident in the unbelievable debate. The pro-life position does emphasise the importance of life within the womb, and the debate's often characterised as the woman's life versus the life within the womb. However, the complete biblical position doesn't set one against the other. Rather, it does place immense value on the woman's body, and this fact rarely seems to be stated. So both the pro-choice and the Bible place importance on a woman's body, but they go about it in different ways. The pro-choice approach is quite happy to end the life within the womb if that seems to be beneficial to the woman. The biblical approach is very different. God's solution is that men and women are to respect their bodies and the bodies of each other. It also presents sex as being confined to marriage between one man and one woman. This isn't done out of the desire to restrict so much as the desire to protect. If society adopted a more biblical approach, then there would be far fewer unwanted pregnancies. But more importantly, it fosters a much greater respect between men and women, both for themselves and for each other. The abortion issue is indeed a matter of choice, but it's whether we follow a path of life or a path of death. Thank you very much for those responses and many more that came in to the debate on abortion, is it a human right? Again, available now from the YouTube channel as well. Well, that's all we've time for on this week's edition of the show. The Profile is here next, talking about race with Ben Lindsay. That's Ruth Jackson sitting down with him for The Profile. Do look forward to seeing you, if you can make it, bring a friend as well, to Unbelievable, the conference 2019, just a week away, Saturday the 20th of July. Get yourself booked in at premierchristianradio.com/unbelievableconference. You're unbelievable. But even though we're at the conference, we'll be broadcasting another edition of Unbelievable, of course. Transhumanism is our debate next week. You'll be hearing Micah Redding, a Christian transhumanist, debating Nigel Cameron. What is transhumanism? Well, it's kind of the idea that we can use technology to sort of transcend the human body. But is that a Christian idea? You'll find out on next week's programme. Hope you can join me for it. In the meantime, have a great week. You've been listening to the Unbelievable podcast. Help others find the show by rating and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts from. And discover more shows from Premier at premier.org.uk/podcasts.